Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, Raleigh Wilkins. He's the CEO of Wheeler Wilkins. I don't know about you guys, but sales is that's a tough nut to crack. There just aren't, it feels like there aren't any good salesmen. And I always say I wouldn't invest in a company where the CEO is not the best salesperson. That is to a point to get started. I think there's like two times where the CEO is the main salesperson, the beginning and once they're stable. The large partnership should be that CEO. I mean, not every CEO, but a good portion. They should be the big advocate that sort of wheels in the big fish, and then everybody else's job is to maximize what they get out of that big fish. And Raleigh is working on, I think, a system that helps everybody, really, but in particular military. I'm a huge fan of using military processes and research in order to sort of formalize my ideas and business. And I'm also a huge supporter of the military through the bunker and everybody else that we've worked with over time to try to help, you know, the soldiers who come home and don't have a place, and society doesn't really have a place to put them, and yet they're the perfect suit for sales, for a lot of business spots, leadership, but sales in particular. And so Raleigh goes into the whole kind of piece about this, and I feel like it's definitely worth all of your time. Before we do the Raleigh interview, we have to check in with our Twitter poll, which is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign. We use them. ActiveCampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. The Twitter poll is a simple one. How would you rate your sales? Effective, ineffective, ineffective. Right now, the Twitter poll, majority ineffective. Not a surprise. Listen to this podcast and see how maybe you can flip that around. This is my conversation with Raleigh Wilkins, CEO of Wheeler Wilkins. So obviously anyone who's followed Technori or me personally knows that I have an affinity for veterans. We've worked with Bunker Labs for a long time, on and off, different things, collaborations. I'm a big fan of really anything that creates involvement for everyone in the community to democratize entrepreneurship, to democratize business in general. That is the altruistic reason behind these things. The more functional reason is, and I think I said this to you, Raleigh, when we had a conversation prior to the show, that my first company was sort of built on a lot of the structures and processes put in place by the military, including like after action reviews, mm-hmm. and just the way that we look at stuff. And I just want to say, I had this, like, I mean, in no way to compare what is considered a shitty day at the office with being downrange, not even close. Like, not comparable. So I just want to make sure everyone knows ahead of time that I am in no way comparing those things. But what I will say is the outcome in short term, not as great, but still the same relative, is that when we're in quote unquote crisis, or we're in a situation where there are deadlines that have, depending on the level, great consequences, we tend as human beings to lose ourselves, and we tend to forget very important details. And if you read any of the books, like, this is not military per se. I mean, it is, but it's not direct to the U.S. military, like The Art of War, mm-hmm. or Tecumseh, or anything that sort of sets a belief system up. And then you look at the military and you recognize that what makes SEALs and Rangers SEALs and Rangers is their incredible attention to detail, their incredible ability to reflect on detail in the moment and make immediate reaction decisions that they are reactionary, but they're not, because they did something before it to prepare themselves for when the moment would happen, and they follow through with it. And a lot of it is reps, but a lot of it is how they deconstruct what went down, good or bad, positive or negative outcome, what went down. We deconstruct what happened so that the next time around there's a familiar feeling that becomes instinctive. And in sticking to military, because obviously of your background, there are a handful of job titles in business and across the world, but in business in particular, that lend themselves extraordinarily well to a couple of sets of people with to quote, taken a specific set of skills. And to me, military and athletics lend themselves to sales, and sales in general is something that we are losing. There are very few good quality salespeople. If you ask any CEO when they're trying to hire, they have the hardest time finding sales talent that is senior enough to actually sell a sophisticated product. But then that comes with a base cost plus commissions and so forth. And in the end, you never really know if you're going to get anyone quality. And I think of the military's training of being able to pay attention to detail, to be able to give respect, even if it's an opponent, to give respect due to whoever the person, the target, whatever it is. I think that's very relative. Mm-hmm. And I think the process of that you go through in athletics, the training, the reps, the same with military, it lends itself to a person who's willing to be a self-starter that's going to grind it and see the mission through. And that means bad months of sales, mm-hmm. but sticking it out and making sure that when they have their down month, they didn't get nothing. They figured out all the different reasons that those people were not customers and took it back to the core team and said, we need to either add these functions or find another market. Mm-hmm. And I think that's severely missing. And I think that you're working on something that might really address that. So I want to kind of hear from you on, you know, your what the business is and then sort of what obviously your background and why this has become a mission, another mission for you.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the invite and the chance to be on the show. It's something I'm passionate about. Two things are military and also sales is an art and a science that's being lost in today's world. And you nailed it. It's both science and art. It's the art of persuasion. But at its core, it is a process. And so it's a disciplined process that's instilled upon you early in your career. And so in the military, one of the things that we were taught is there were observable patterns of action that you followed. So you mentioned a few of those after action reports, but OODA loop is another that most Marines know. And it's observe, orient, decide, and act. It's something to go back to when faced with a new input or stimuli that you hadn't seen before. And so in sales, what was interesting to me is I left the military active duty in 2001, and I had really no training. I had some sales training that I'd received selling vacuums door-to-door, Kirby vacuums, if you remember those.
Oh, of course.
And so,
come to our house.
Yeah, and it was a script. It was a process. It was verbiage. It was the art and science of being in someone's home and convincing them to purchase something 10 times the normal cost.
Yep.
And you left that day, and they had 5 days to change their mind. So it wasn't like you could swindle them. You literally had to build value in the product and reframe it in a different way. And so, you know, sales is the only job in the world you fail 90% of the time and we promote you.
Yep.
I mean, think about being a bridge builder.
You know, not even baseball players get away with that kind of
stuff. No, they don't. They don't, because a 10% batting average, you're probably not going to be in the majors very
and
long.
Bridge building would be a bad, bad failure rate.
That it would. But good. That one stayed up, so it was okay. No. That's but in true. Sales, so you're going to fail, and you're going to fail often. And to your exact point, it's how do you assess the failure, and then what do you go back to? See, selling is, and so my background, when I went into the business world, I went into marketing. I started finishing my undergraduate degree. I didn't have it. And then got pulled into sales because, to me, it had discipline process. You followed a set of rules. There was a prescription for how you overcame your objections. There was more of an interaction with the client themselves. And it was all tied back to something that I could articulate, which were metrics and data and executing against a plan. And if you think about any military branch in the United States, you all go through a boot camp. It doesn't matter if it's Navy, Marine Corps, Army, Coast Guard, Air Force. When you go through a boot camp, you learn a system, you learn rank structure, you learn to follow a process, you learn to follow a discipline, you learn to overcome adversity, and you graduate. And when you come off out of boot camp, you go into a world where you can't choose who you work for and you can't fire the team that you have. So you have to work within the team you have in order to accomplish the mission. And so one of the hidden mottos of the Marine Corps that we always talk about when you're in is adapt, improvise, and overcome. We get hand-me-down material from the Army. We have to transform it into some of the most complicated missions in the world. And we have to execute without enough information in theaters of war that are always changing. And so if you think about the sales function, there's a lot of similarities, because what does it take to be successful as an entry-level salesperson when you go into the world? You have to be able to follow a discipline. You have to be able to follow a process. You have to be able to follow somebody else's way. You have to execute against it, and you have to experience failure, and you have to have resiliency. And what we have is a military that's coming out every year. 230,000 to 280,000 active duty military exit every year. They go into a civilian world that doesn't know what to do with them. 52% of those people are under the age of 25, and only 3% have college degrees. And in that same report that was released last year, 60 to 85% of those veterans leave active duty without a job, and the ones that do have it have 5 jobs in 2 years. And so you think about it, like if you have a military background, you don't know the strength you have in the business world, because you, like me, came from Franklin, Virginia. Yep. And it's a town of 8,000 people, and the best job there is working at the Union Camp, which was a paper mill. and you could hope to be an A-class mechanic. I had no idea that the sales was in existence for someone like me. I had a mentor take me under their wing. Next thing you know, I'm in a sales process, using process, a book that I discovered on a bookstore, which saved my career, Stephen Schiffman's Cold Calling Basics, if you've never read it.
I have heard that, yeah, yes.
It's amazing. And so in following that, I realized there was a process and a discipline. I realized that I had not been doing the job. I negatively assimilated on the sales team. I was the worst performing rep on the worst performing team in T-Mobile in Bethesda, Maryland. And I was going to lose my job and I was going to quit.
The honesty, though. Yeah. Is so...
And my roommate, I came home and said, I got to quit. This is terrible. And he said, dude, you got to pay rent. And I was like, all right, yeah, I got to pay rent. So he said, well, why don't you try doing your job? It sounds like you're trying a lot harder not to do your job. And what had happened was in the military, you learn to assimilate with the team you have. And unfortunately, for me, I negatively assimilated. And so I was taking those two-hour lunches. I didn't follow the process. And faced with kind of homelessness, I guess, or at least having to find a roommate and learning the process, I went back to my military roots, took that book, had failed enough to realize and see the truth within it, wrote out all my scripts, started learning there was a sales process, abandoned what I had been taught by the leadership team, created my own process, and within 9 months got promoted twice meritoriously and went from the worst performing rep, worst performing team in America for the T-Mobile to being the number four rep in the country. And I started to believe in process. And I took that to every company I went. And so I became sales manager, sales director, sales VP, VP of sales, went to NASDAQ at one acquisition, then finished my career before I started this company 2 years ago at New Horizons as senior vice president of sales there. But at one time, I had a high school diploma and I was running a team of PhD scientists. And it was all from the leadership training I'd received in the military. But through the crucible of fire, I'd learned how to translate that into actionable, practical things that I could do as a rep and then teach my team how to do it.
I want to ask you, so I have kind of this theory of this, and we might have talked about this on the call, but the thing that, so I have this nature nurture kind of fight where I'm not sure if certain types of people are trained or born. And then after our conversation, I really reflected a little bit on myself. And I've said this to Sam and my team several times that the book you mentioned as well as this, I'm not condoning Jordan Belfort nutbag mm-hmm. stuff, but the Wolf of Wall Street guy's book, The Way of the Wolf, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it wasn't as much to me as like a tell all of how I would do it as much as an affirmation that what I do naturally, my natural skill sets for understanding conversation, communication were there.
Yeah.
And that he called them different things, but what he went through was like, oh, I do that. I'm successful at sales because I do those things. Mm-hmm. I have a process. I just didn't know that I had a process, which made me think, okay, so maybe it's nurture. It's not nature. Cause once you could, if I have it innately, putting a frame around it makes me better. If I don't have it, I can be trained it. And then I started thinking about myself again. I was like, well, wait, let's like go back again and look at oneself. Do I have the natural skill sets that I would think a person should have in order to be a salesperson? And the answer is no. I am terrible with people. I am incredibly awkward in networking. I don't have any of those things. I trained myself how to be competitive with my process knowledge mm-hmm. on how to improve. The game became not about you, the person I'm selling. The game became about me.
Right.
Functionally exercising my process. So I wonder to you now, you had failure in the beginning at T-Mobile and then you ended up at number four. Did you, when you read the books and you started thinking about your process that you learned in the military, did you recognize that you were doing all the things that were what you could do, all the things that they had names for, but it was just natural to you? It was just, this is how it went? Or was it literally like you retrained yourself completely anew and you could have ended a failure?
Yeah, well, I think unless you're born a psychopath, you hate failure. And yeah. You hate other people not particularly caring for you or liking you. And there is some sense in sales of bothering people. And so there was this sense to me of like, there has to come a point if you're going to be successful in sales where you do some self-reflection. Because
in everything.
Yeah, and especially when you're confronted with failure day after day after day after day. And sales is not as linear as that most of the day and age people would make you think now. See, technology and selling has replaced the art of selling.
Yes.
And there seems to be this idea that if I can get the right widget, then I'm going to be able able to have salespeople that are successful. And that makes about as much sense as buying top-level guitars for entry-level students. They're not going to know the difference. And without a song for them to play, the guitar is useless.
Yes.
And so when I have a really good guitar, which is an app on Salesforce or a HubSpot or anything else, but there's no process to support it, or the process that's in place is no longer supporting what's happening
this
with my customers.
This segment's sponsored by ActiveCampaign, so we'll throw them in there.
Okay. There you go. And so, and they're all good processes, but it's kind of like when you said, what makes a sales rep? There's a lot of passions I have in life, but one of the things that I think is one of the most misunderstood functions in the world is a sales management role, that frontline sales manager. Because you have four archetypes of sales rep. You have, and I'm being generalized, you have account executives. They go find a company, first time sell, nobody's ever bought it before.
Call them the new news.
The new news. You have the client sales, who sells the second product into that company. You have the account manager, who's a relationship manager who manages the account that's pretty much bought what you can buy from them, and it's maintaining it. And then you also have business development, which is a whole slew of these kind of marketing reps, inbound lead gen. They're converting and doing research, sales research. Those four archetypes all are loosely related. And in smaller companies, it's all one person. But as you start to grow and the function shifts, sometimes it doesn't morph in order to happen that way. And so let's take a company that's growing really fast. It grows to 10 million and it's got 20 outside sales reps, but they have no client retention strategy. When I went to MarketWire, we were losing over half of our clients every year because there was no client retention strategy or team there. Yep. Because I can't envision what I don't know. And when you take that account executive and you promote them to sales manager, they're moving further away from their wheelhouse the further they get promoted. So now I have to all of a sudden learn how to manage client salespeople. I've never done a territory plan. I've never done account management. And then when I become a director of sales, now I'm managing managers. And managing managers, that's another place I failed because they don't want to be treated like reps, for sure. Yep. And they manage differently than I do. And there's a process that needs to be in place for managers. And then when you go and become a VP of sales, now you're creating strategy. You're doing regression analysis to figure out the controls for mailings. You're looking at comp plans. You're looking at attrition rates. You're looking at forecasting 3 years. You're presenting to boards. Your team has now become. So, you know, again, back to military, this is the pathway and where the reason we created this company is that when you go and go from becoming an account executive to sales manager, there's zero training available for you on things like learning that the people that reported into me, I thought that was my team. But that's not my team. That's my platoon. My sales platoon is the people that I am responsible for their day-to-day lives. They need to be fed, housed, and protected at all costs except for the mission. And so that's my job because that's who I'm in charge of. But my team becomes marketing, finance, operations, IT, all the other players and heads of their departments. But no one ever teaches that. And it creates this dysfunctional world inside organizations where everyone has their own agendas and there's no one to help. And so what do? We go and try to find a new VP of sales because that's going to fix everything. But then they give them
especially when they have absolutely no business logic.
Yeah, and then they give them no training. They have no coach for them. It makes up as much sense as going to get a Division I athlete and bringing them here, expecting them to show up and score touchdowns on Sunday.
I always laugh. I used this line to somebody, and it was actually not that long after we met. I was like, you're getting, like, I don't even remember the exact point of the conversation other than to say, I said to them, I was like, you're getting confused when they make the comparison to LeBron James would have been an amazing tight end in the NFL. And you're like, it's easy to say that because you can compare it to like a couple of the guys that, you know, were on the Chargers and all whatever that had played basketball and not football. Those are the aberration. Those are the few that are freaks. The rest of the very talented athletes that are all the right size and shape, they would be dropped into an NFL game and get their heads taken off.
Yeah.
Like, you, it doesn't matter how amazingly physically, mentally gifted you are, if they don't have a process to train, retain, measure, and like point to the mistakes because you make them, you've got nothing. You've just got a bench full of studs, but you can't sell anything.
Yeah, and that's what happens. And so when we go out and find it, I mean, it would be the other thing that happens is we make the fallacy of thinking that I'm going to bring a VP of sales or a salesperson even who's successful in another company and bring them to my company, but I don't know what questions to ask to find out how they became successful. Yeah. Did they win the war of attrition? Were they a product that would have sold itself?
Yeah.
Were they the 100
There's
trained
animals? There's 8 million of those.
Yeah. And so, you know, and bringing somebody from a big company to your small startup, they don't have access to budget. They don't have anybody to fall back on. It's all their own vision and ideas. They were executed and coaches, but not ideators. So when you go back to the military and you start thinking about the parallels to back it up to the original, the military is a defined rank structure. And so in the military, in the Marine Corps especially, it's even like the date of rank. So when I got militaristically promoted twice, my date of rank was the second of the month. So somebody that was on the first, because they had gone it through naturally, they outranked me. Yep. Now, that's important in times of war. That's when it makes sense, because somebody's about to make the call. But when you're in an organization, one of the things that we were taught in the military was, if you ever have to use your rank, you don't deserve to have it.
Yep.
And yet, when you go into the civilian world...
I'm the VP.
Yeah, I'm the VP. That's great. We're going to do it this way. Or...
your last company went out of business.
Yeah,
don't
or you
care.
Have a VP of sales who has been promoted really to the Peter Principle. So they're at their point of highest incompetence. They're struggling. They have no one they're going to complain to, because they can't go to their CEO and say, I don't know how to do a forecast. Yeah. Literally, I was director of sales for North America for a company that manufactures synthetic DNA, and I was asked to put together a P&L report, and I had to Google P&L.
Yep.
I'm embarrassed to say it, but no one taught me.
It wasn't your
it
world.
It wasn't something I learned. And I learned it on the way. And it's just so much wasted effort. And so when you put these career pathways in there, there's a schematic that I use, we put up on our site, but it shows all the pathways you have to go if you wanted to go from a private in the Marine Corps all the way to the general. And you go, every rank that you get promoted has a leadership and training development academy attached to it. Now, some big companies like LinkedIn, they're doing a lot around sales management development. There's a software commercial tribe, Paul Ironside's doing great work there. There's a lot of work and research that's happening around those pieces. But what they haven't done so far is put it together for the SMB company.
Yep.
And that's where our wheelhouse is. And that's why when I started this company, I said, there is a lot of research and tools available for enterprise level companies. There's not much for these late stage startups, SMB companies, and that $10 to $50 million looking to get that Series B. Probably the guys that are coming on your show, they're a late stage startup. Maybe they're looking for their first capital investment. They know they need to grow sales. But how do I take the message I had as a CEO and a visionary and then empower that to a sales team? And so then I started thinking back and I said, okay, one thing we got to do is I have to have what we call ground truth in the military, which is that you trust the brutes that are on the ground more than you do the aerial topography and the recon that you got from other sources. So there's famous examples of that. Pickett's Charge in the Civil War was one. When you look at one angle, it seemed like a clear shot to the top of the mountain. The other side looked like a complete disaster. But when you go into a business, all we do is I created this survey that I used when I went in as a new head of sales, and I would meet with finance, operation, sales, IT, all the different technology leaders, and then I would say, all right, what are our growth goals for this year? So when I say, okay, 2019, our growth goal was 20% top line sales, and then we would need to maintain at least 40% of our margin on all the products that we sell, and we want to increase our customer base by X percentage. Then I look at the comp plan. Does it support that? I mean, you'd be surprised how many companies I go into and they say that their main thing they're trying to do right now is increase the customer base and maintain margin, and yet the reps are maintained on top line sales growth. And so there's a disconnect between what they're being rewarded for and what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I used to say, if you want to hire something from a sales rep, put it on a website. We'll never find it. We're being trained by a sales manager who's promoted from a account executive whose last time he got any training was probably 2 years ago, and the product pitch has shifted, the market has shifted, the things we need to focus on. I literally got in a email conflict, which turned into a voice conflict with one of my CEOs, because he wanted our reps on the phone 4 hours a day making 100 calls a day. And I'm like, this isn't 1998.
Yeah.
That's not the way we sell these
days.
Pound
the phones and shove product down their throat is not really how that goes.
Right. And there is some points. He was right that they needed to be on more customer contact. But there's no training.
Yeah.
And because there's no boots on the ground, there's no ground truth to say, hey, here's where we're missing. These are the stall points we're going to hit. So we came up with this ground truth assessment that we go in an organization and say, hey, you're a private equity VC company, or your company looking to get private equity VC money. We'll come in and do the assessment, and then we'll look at it, and we can pick out those stall points for you, the places that you need to invest in before you do something like bring in new salespeople or develop the product. And these are all hard won from my own experience and failures. And so we take that and put it in there. But other than the sales process, because we talked earlier how important sales process is and putting a disciplined sales process and structure and methodology, that's a big piece of what we've done. The other piece is this access to talent. And so what I did is, this time of year, if there's any sales managers listening to this or VPs, and they're going into Q4 soon, and they're looking at their number, and they're going, how am I missing my number? Every rep on my team is in their band of commission, but I'm not hitting my number. They're in danger of hitting the statistic of every VP of sales less than 18 months. That's their tenure.
Yep.
It's a short life expectancy. And the reason is, don't hit top line sales goals.
Yeah.
And so why don't you hit your top line sales goals? It took me 5 years in sales management to get the answer to that. And the answer was I vastly underestimated the impact of open headcount, ramp time, and attrition on my sales team. Meaning if I, it's,
you know, that's definitely not on the driver model for most companies.
No, and it's not even on a training that you've ever seen for a sales manager. Like when you sit down in October, November, and you sign off on your budget for 2020, you're not thinking how many reps am I going to lose this year and when I lose them is going to impact my number.
Yeah.
But if you have a top line sales goal of say $6 million or $7.2 million, and you have to put it together by having all these reps hit their numbers, what happens when a rep's not there?
Yeah.
And so a rep leaving an organization is about as sure as death and taxes.
Yep.
We lose 25 to 40% every year. And so what I had to do was calculate and figure out what were those four main inputs that would help me calculate the attrition. And that's when I find out what it's going to actually cost me. And so access to talent is the number one challenge. When I have open headcount, it kills my sales quota.
So I think that for anyone who's an early stage company, they are, this affects everybody, but the early stage companies in particular, the number of, we just hired away somebody who worked at name your big 600 West Chicago located company that was successful here, VP of sales because they crushed it. It's like, did you ask them what they sold? Or did you ask them how the structure of sales that they get to, yeah, we did 20 million rep. Who's the we? Is it you and a mouse in your pocket? Like who, because like just because you succeeded there or DoorDash doesn't mean you're going to be good here. The product is not the same. Our process is not the same. Our access to talent is not the same. Our money is not the, like everything is different. I think just knowing the lay of the land and having a process that is independent of the company and then going into that company and saying, can I adopt what I'm doing or adapt what I'm doing to what you have? Or is it my job now that I work at your company to help you be, I hate saying this term, but woke, to get you to the point where you're like, we're not, whoever started this didn't set up a good process. It was good for them up to $1 million, but not 10, 20, 100. So I think there's a lot of validity to everything you're saying. The other thing I would add is what I really like about what you're offering here is, and you know, I say this all the time, young people, not, I'm not just pissing on millennials, but like young people in general don't do face-to-face. They don't. So when you talk about the erosion of art, if you spend all day long keeping up with people on social media and that's where your interface is, you don't have a natural disposition. There are not, I very rarely, I will name him because he's so rare. Patrick Tenuse from TS2T is one of those rare birds. When you meet him, he gives you a hug, a real hug. Jimmy DeCastro, the former CEO of WGN, now at CBS, another cat like that. Gives you a real hug, like sweaty palm on my back, uncomfortable, good hug. And it's because he's a natural. He's a communicator. He's a person who meets people and talks to them and loves it. Most people aren't that way. And so if you can, I'm not that way. So if I can use anything I can to bolster my weaknesses, that's something that's important. And I think that over time, you can learn to be better at it. You may not be a natural, but you can become better at communicating with people. The best, easiest way to become that, I'm speaking from experience on my side that is less structured than your side, but it is the same general outcome,
yeah,
is to turn your process, your thing into your own crutch.
Yeah.
I always have the ability to lean in on, okay, I'm prepared.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else here who's dealing, when shit hits the fan, they're scattered. They're hiding under their desk because they don't want to be seen when the sales numbers come. I can always lean in and go, didn't hit my mark. But here's the five reasons why I didn't hit my mark, and I know it.
Yeah, well, it's like science. You know, you have to reduce the variables down to as possible.
Totally.
And so in sales, you always taught you're doing one of two things. You're either disturbing the comforted or you're comforting the disturbed.
Yes. Great.
And so
there's your quote.
Yeah. So if they're comforting the disturbed, that's pretty easy. They come to you and they say, I see your product. Oh my God, I got to have it. You would think that's the easiest sale, but it's actually the hardest in this day and age because in the access to information and competing information, they think they've educated themselves on the benefits. Benefits the product as they think it pertains to the product. The problem they have, most companies cannot accurately articulate what their problem is. So they've got a gaping hole and they're trying to cover it with a Band-Aid, you know, or they're buying technology that's way too advanced for their sales force, is an example. But disturbing the comforted requires an art of persuasion. An art of persuasion is a heart sales. And it doesn't have to be one-on-one live interaction. But what it has to do with is giving you new information. I have to teach you something you didn't know. I have to tailor it in a way that resonates with you. And then I have to make it differentiated in a way and easy for you to buy. Now, in sales, when you're having a conversation, the only person that should feel like it's a conversation is the prospect, not you.
Yep.
And it's not about being unethical, but it's something as simple as reframing the conversation in a way so you can teach them something they didn't already know.
One of the best ones I've seen of that, or as far as things to do, is what I call mirroring. Mm-hmm. It's something as simple as physical. I'm sitting here, I have a conversation with you. You're very comfortable, although very militaristic. You have fantastic posture, whereas mine is shit. I know that if I stand up and I look at you and I'm trying to be equal with you, that we're going to have a more natural conversation because you and I are both feeling the exact same. Whereas if I'm disinterested and I'm just sort of like looking away and you know, whatever, and you're on it, this is very difficult. You can actually get into my world if I'm the customer and I'm doing that. You can get into my world by maybe not going exact mirror. You don't want to do it immediately because it looks a little, you know, awkward. But if you slowly just sort of like get into my comfort zone, you can recognize that maybe I'm a little bit more of a, you know, easygoing guy. You can make me relate to you just physically. And the same thing has to be said on the conversation. I think this makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And even like you'd be surprised the number of companies in their formalized onboarding process, they have LinkedIn, but no LinkedIn training.
Yeah.
So it's like, how would I approach someone that's head of IT if I'm selling managed services that's been there for 90 days versus somebody that's been there for 6 months? I need to have a script that's different for each one because the person that's been there for 90 days is probably ready to make some changes but has no credibility in the organization. Yep. Somebody that's been there for 6 years probably put those things in place. You have to be careful how you talk about it.
Correct.
And so one of the things I always do when I start any sales training, I have this book and I copy it and hand it out to the class members and we just have fun with it. I send it to them on email. And this is basically a paraphrase quote. It says, you know, when somebody goes to your website or your store and they made a decision to buy something, that's great. You should take it. That's an order. Don't talk them out of it. That's how you make money.
Yeah.
But you've done no real selling. But when someone comes to your store, visits a site, or you approach them through regular outreach and you have induced them to do something that they had not intended on doing when they came, then you've done real selling.
Yep.
And so we all sell every day. Hey, I want to go to this movie. Well, I want to go to another one.
I sell
one.
The minute I get home.
Yeah.
The minute I get home is when I do my best selling.
And you think about that. That probably sounds like it comes from like any kind of modern selling you would get them or any of these guys, right? It's from a 1921 Advanced Business Correspondence book by Hodgkins that I found when I was at a wedding up in New England. Just stumbled. I'm a 100-year-old book.
Use talking about the space,
art,
they say.
Of letter writing. And if you think about today's day and age, see, the problem is when you have technology and a medium, the challenge is that anyone right now can create any content and seem just as credible as an incredible expert.
Yep.
And so in a sea of content and a sea of information, people become paralyzed. I call it sales vertigo.
Yep.
They have so much information, they don't know where to go. That's why sales is so critical these days. A lot of the times you're taking the disturbed who are coming to you and really having it through a series of disciplined questions help uncover what it is they actually need. And the way this ties back to military is you think about these guys coming off active duty. Our 2.0 version of this is what we're looking to do now is create a sales platoon where we take guys off active duty and we take these women and men and we put them in sales platoons for the first 3 months to 9 months that they're out. And we put them in a boot camp where we teach them selling and then lend them out to startup companies where they pay a monthly fee instead of having to hire them on.
Yep.
So it de-risks and then creates a transition plan. And so it gives an access to talent. You talked earlier about how hard it is to find talent. Well, this is an untapped talent. There's no one that's going out to get these guys now because they're going back to their small towns without training. And there's nothing wrong with anything they're going to do. But why don't we give them another opportunity to go out and have the career that I had?
I love it. I think it's totally needed. Where do people go to actually get on and use this?
Yeah. So they can go to our site right now, which is wheeler-wilkins.com. They can reach out to me. I don't know if you post contact information. It's small right now. It's me and three interns. We're a very small organization. We're looking to align. So we're looking at other recruiting firms because it's really human capital play.
Yep.
So there's Chamberlain Advisors, who has got an amazing soldier to Salesforce model that they're looking at. We're working with Bunker Labs, just started partnering with them. We're looking for corporate sponsorship. And so the idea is to create these incubators in order to do this. So, you know, they can find us on wheeler-wilkins.com. Contact information is there. And then, you know, we're on Instagram. We're starting to post more. So, you know, when you're a small company, it's hard to do it all. So
you got to put out a lot of fires. Raleigh, I really appreciate you taking the time to come in here, and I hope more people reach out.
Okay, thanks.
Of course. To learn more about upcoming investment opportunities, download previous podcasts, or to follow us on social, just look up at Tech Nori or find me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.